and action.
Welcome to All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Call our guest line during the live show and talk about wine on air. Dial area code 646-727-3235. From coast to coast.
Spacer, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire. New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on, and our phone lines are open. In the U.S., call 646-727-3235.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boy Flip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello de Borghese.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
How this show has grown from, you know, maybe a couple hundred to over 40,000 people. And yeah, that's fantastic.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Full of Vineyard.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wines.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Bebock Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
West Port Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And now, it's the show dedicated to the wine industry. Although, sometimes we do get off track.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
Belvoir Winery. I've heard voices at the winery.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
It's All About Wine. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you, both people.
So... Whoa! Great group out there. The wine has already started to flow, apparently.
The rains have passed and they're settled in.
That's right. Welcome to the show. It's Thursday, August something, the 15th. And we are back live at 7 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Yeah, and the big start of our hurricane season, apparently between now and October 1st, it's supposed to be the busiest time, and we've already got things going up there, so let's get on with it before we get hit by something. Yes, and there was something in that intro where you said, you know, send us an email if there's something you want to discuss, and it wasn't through email, but you actually had someone... post a message on the Facebook page at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And I guess here comes the response. So we'll cover that tonight as well. And who is calling me now? So we will cover that topic. Thank you very much. That was from Raffle Rescue, I believe, was sending a message Facebook. Yeah. And really appreciate that. So. And I still have their brochure here. Very, very cool organization.
It is.
Yeah.
It is.
So, yeah. So, and they're also frequenting the Wine Fest out there at Florida State's Winery. And anyway, thanks for the suggestion. And I believe Ron's actually going to cover that topic tonight. And I will sit back and start tweeting things and as we go along. So, if you have anything you want to talk about wine, give us a call on the guest line, by the way. 646-727-3235. Call us in. Get on here, and we'll put you on air or whatever. Cool.
Yep.
And here's Ron. Yeah.
We'll be happy. Thank you. We'll be happy to talk to you about anything about wine. We just, you know.
Yeah.
Let's see. These we've talked about. Those we've talked about. This. I'm looking at some notes here, some things here, and some articles, and we're pretty much up to date on some of those here, but Raffle Rescue, I put a post on Facebook, on the All About Wine Facebook page, And I said, no guests this week because Texas, you're flaking out on me. I'm a little disappointed. I'm going to have to, you know, barrage him with more emails and phone calls and see if, you know, anybody bites. But I'm a little disappointed in the Texas response. Although, you know, we talked about this. It is harvest time of year. So maybe they are in the middle of harvest or something like that. And that's the reason we're not hearing from them. But, you know, so we'll give them that excuse. But otherwise, no guests this week because we haven't heard from anyone from Texas. And so I put a post on Facebook, said, I'm looking for subjects, looking for topics. Anybody have any suggestions? Anybody have any questions? And Raffle Rescue put a question up. They said, what about food and wine pairings? Which is a very good question, actually, because it's something that whenever people come into the winery, they're always asking. I've talked to different people in wine shops and retail stores, and it's something that's always being asked. You know, I'm having this tonight. What do you suggest I pair it with? Something I cover in the class I teach. I always bring up something about the wine and food and what goes well with what and all that. And so I thought, what a great chance to talk about that a little bit. Well, as luck would have it, I found a great article. This is out of Beverage Dynamics magazine, one of the many journals that I get, trade journals and trade magazines I get. This is a great article. The title of the article is Wine Goes With Everything, which it pretty much does, but it's certain wines go better with certain things, obviously. So I'm not going to read the article, but what I'm going to do is I'm going to go through in different parts here and paraphrase different things and tell you about some of the stuff he said. And I'll read some lines, quote some of them and all that. He said that people are always asking. He starts out, if retailers had a dime for every time a customer asks, can you help me decide what wine to serve at my dinner party, most retailers probably be able to retire, which is true. It's something that's being asked quite often. Well, let's go back. One of the things I say in my classes, one of the things I tell people all the time, for years and years, wineries have been telling us, you need to have white wine with fish and fowl and red wine with meat. And this has been the classic answer to what wine to serve with what. But, you know, anymore they're saying, you know, have anything with anything. It's entirely up to you, you know, eat and drink whatever combinations you want. And I tell people the same thing. I don't care what you eat with my wine. Just buy my wine. Just keep buying it, and you can eat it with anything. Drink it with anything that you're going to eat. So, and that's really the bottom line there. It's just the wineries are saying, you know, just makes no difference. Just keep buying wine. And people are. People are buying wine, and that's the key to it. But I'm back to old school here. I like a balance, and this is really what it's all about. It's a balance. I'm not going to have myself a big, heavy, strong Cabernet with a lightly fried and lightly seasoned piece of tilapia. It's just going to lose it. Same thing, I'm not going to have myself a big seasoned steak and open up a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc. You're going to lose it. It's going to taste like you're drinking water. It's going to lose all the flavors. So you want that balance. And this is about what this article is talking about. It's talking about balance. It's talking about how certain wines will hold up with certain types of food. There are no rules. You can drink anything you want with anything, and a lot of people do now. A lot of people open up a bottle of just about anything. But if you really start looking at what you're drinking, you start looking at what you're tasting, you may notice that you're losing some of the flavors of the wine. You may notice that you're losing some of the flavors of the meal, even depending on what wine you're having with it. We're going to go through some suggestions here. We're going to go through some examples and see if we can help you. See if we can help you make those decisions and bring out the best in both the food and the wine. It's So, I don't know, less about the old rigor standards, more about personal taste. But not only is it personal taste, but it's a willingness to experiment, a chance to try something with something and see if it works. And if it works, and you know, great, fantastic. But keep in mind, like I just said, don't drink something and say, oh, this is great, and then realize that you are losing some of what you're tasting. For example, alcohol levels in wine are jumping up. A lot of them are going up and off the charts in the 15-16% range, and it's just a lot of alcohol, and it just it's going to start to overpower a lot of things. A lot of restaurants, I understand. I've talked to different restaurants. A lot of restaurants are selling some of these big, bold, high-alcohol wines. California is starting to get on this bandwagon. They're starting to get on this high-alcohol bandwagon. And, you know, I tell people, seldom will you see wines above 17% alcohol. You're not going to see a whole bunch of them up there because of the fact that the federal government taxes us on a higher rate once we pass 17%, up to 17%, a little bit lower rate, and it can be substantial if you're starting to pump out a whole bunch of high alcohol wines. So most of them try to keep it right below that 17% level because of the higher taxes. Given all the money to the government, people try to avoid that. So you're still going to get wines 15-16%. New World wines and New World is post Old World. If you don't know, New World is North and South America, Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, probably included in the New World. If you look at it, Old World wines, France, Germany, Italy, Spain, Portugal, the European, the ones that have been around for a long time. But New World wines like Argentinian Malbecs, for example, intense, a lot of black pepperiness, balsamic undertones, heavy fruit intensity, Chilean Carmineras. I love a Carmineras. It's got the pepperiness undertones to that also. You never used to see those on tables. They were just so powerful, so strong. Now you're starting to see those pop up more and more, because they will match with certain foods. They will help. I mean, you don't want to serve them as an aperitif. You don't want to serve them before the meal, because you're going to end up deadening some of your salad or your appetizers. But with some of these salads and appetizers that are out there now, it may work. You have yourself all sorts of stronger dressings that are applied to salads. You have yourself some of the appetizers are seasoned appetizers. I had some chicken wings at a restaurant a while back. They called them fusion wings, and a lot of seasonings on it, a lot of flavors coming out, an awful lot of flavors coming out, and a little bit of higher alcohol would balance with that. That's what you're looking at, the balance there. The Napa drinkers are bringing out with a lot of – in fact, last Thanksgiving, Cabernet Sauvignon was being served with a lot of turkey around the country, Napa cabs and stuff, because it's the way the turkey is being made and the heavy seasonings you're putting on turkeys now, some of your your classic turkey is being spiced up, if you will, a little bit more, so the cabs will hold up with it, and is not something that you normally would think about. Beef dishes, again, you want something that's going to hold up with it, but something you can't overlook, and that's sparkling wine, and I'm going to get into that a little bit more here in the discussion a little bit. Sparkling wines are great pairing for a lot of stuff. So I've been saying it's not just your everyday drink anymore. It's something that you can start looking at more and more. General guidelines In general, modern rules on food and wine compatibility focus on the wine's overall body, the level of alcohol, sugar, and tannin it contains. That's what you're looking at. You're not just the wine itself. You can't say Cabernet because there's so many different styles of Cabernet. You can't say Merlot. Again, there's so many different styles. People walk into the winery and say, I love a Merlot. And I go, yeah, one, I love a hamburger. You can get one at McDonald's for 49 cents on Wednesday, or you can get a hamburger at Outback or any other or TGI Fridays or something like that that has the big, juicy, full-bodied hamburgers. There's a big range of Cabernets. There's a big range of Merlots. There's a big range of all those wines. So to say, pair this wine with this food all the time is an injustice to both the wine and the food. You want something that's going to balance. Again, you want to be sure that it's not going to overpower. Think of wines running along the usual flavor spectrum. You got light white wines with no oak aging at one end, and you've got intense long age reds at the other. That is what you're looking at as the range here. And do the same thing with food. Raw vegetables and plain cheeses like mozzarella are one end of the food spectrum. And then spicy foods like curried chicken and barbecued ribs are at the other. If you look at it that way, you match them up according to where you're at on that. Wines should be something that is going to offer a balance. And I keep going back to balance, but that is really the key to it more than anything else. You want that flavors to come out in the wine. You want the flavors to come out in the food. And if the wine is overpowering, you've lost the food flavors. And if the food is overpowering, you've lost the wine flavors. For example, fruit-forward New World wines tend to hit the palate sweeter than do Old World wines made with the higher acid levels and more traditionally balanced, which also tend to pack a lesser alcohol punch. Okay, so Old World wines are going to have a little bit less alcohol. New World wines tend to be a little bit sweeter. Simple and subtle dishes, especially composed of salads, lightly dressed, cooked seafood, pasta with light sauces, stuff like that can be overwhelmed by the New World wines, the big, powerful, oaky, tropical fruit wines that you find, either reds or whites or whatever. You don't want the big, heavy whites balancing, but you can go to Old World wines, and maybe that wine will be what you want. A lighter, fruitier Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand may be just what you're looking for something, whereas a Sauvignon Blanc from somewhere else may be too powerful. So you have to look at the styles again, back like when I said I like hamburger. There are so many different styles on it. Another example, what to pair with pasta with red sauce depends on how it's prepared. Okay, if it's, for example, you have summer tomatoes, freshly cooked, lightly seasoned, a very herbaceous Sauvignon Blanc, or a full-bodied Italian white wine, or even a rosé, or a light-bodied red might go with those, which will keep it numb. But if you keep in mind the high acid levels of the tomatoes and the seasonings, if you're doing the pasta and the lightly cooked pasta is going to have garlic, onion, basil, oregano, all these type of seasonings in it, that's going to dominate that food. So you're going to want something that's going to hold up. It's not because it's pasta, it's because of the seasonings. And this is really why you're looking at possibly a light-bodied red or a light Beaujolais even or something like that, Dolcetto di Alba. A rosé. Rosés, again, get that out of the mind that, my mom likes a white Zin. This is, get away from that attitude that, white Zins and rosés are something that you don't look at because it's something that could pair well with some of these. Now, if if you're having a red sauce and a hearty, meaty red sauce, then you'll want to get away from those lighter ones. You're going to want a little bit more medium-bodied or full-bodied wine. Sangiovese, Barbarisco, Nebbiolo, Pinot Noir, Grenache, for example, is going to hold up better with the meat sauce, a hearty meat sauce, a little bit of garlicky meat sauce, stuff like that. So it's not just pasta, it's the sauce that you're preparing for the pasta. It's how it's going to play out in your mouth, not what the basic dish is. Another thing you might do, which is a good idea, what you might try to do is match the region of the dish with the wine of that region, which is really a fun idea, and it's a good idea to do. If you're having pasta, traditionally an Italian dish, then look at some Italian wines that would match it. If you're having something lighter. American foods tend to be lighter. We tend to go a little bit lighter and bland on our foods overall. Look at something that's going to be a little bit lighter that will hold up with it. If you're looking at something with some spiciness in it, stuff like that, look at something that might balance that. Not all Italian wines are going to go well with lasagna. Not all Spanish wines are going to go well with cheeses, heavy cheeses. But if you look at the overall balance of it, then that's going to help you choose what wines you want with those cheese. Now, sparkling wines, I mentioned a little bit earlier, sparkling wines and what sparkling wines can do. Sparkling wines are, if you want to pick one type of wine that's going to go well with just about anything, you can probably say it's going to be a sparkling wine, a champagne or a sparkling wine or a cava or a Prosecco. Cava is the Spanish for a sparkling wine for champagne. Prosecco is Italian for a sparkling wine or champagne style. So you can do a lot if you start looking at sparkling wines and the different styles of sparkling wines. We've talked about champagnes in the past, about the different styles and what they, dry isn't really dry and stuff like that. You can't go wrong. You start the meal with the sparkling wine. When you sit down, pop open a bottle of sparkling wine, and it works well with some salty snacks, some vegetables with dips, raw fish or seafood, spicy cured meats,
my engineer just fixed my phone. I thought I broke it. So I just gooded her on that.
Fried finger foods, Asian style appetizers. It's really, hard to try to think of a champagne, sparkling wine, Prosecco, cava that won't go well with a lot of these foods. I mean, there's so many nice styles and all that. A light and medium intensity main dishes like roast poultry, poached or boiled seafood, grilled seafood, chowder, stews. All these are served with a tart, sparkling wine. Great combinations there. Great, great ideas. Sparkling wines aren't just to start the meal. They're not just to end it, but look at it through the meal. It's something that's rather unique, and people will love it as something that's going to be a little bit different than what they're used to. Spain is coming out with a lot of different wines now, sparkling wines, cava. Italy just came out with a new well-known brand, Cremante Bordeaux, and some of the other lesser-known French sparklers are hitting the shelves. You can go from high-end cavas down to some low-price ones. There's one out there called Jaume Serra Cristalino, J-A-U-M-E-S-E-R-R-A-C
Cristallino. That's a Cava Spanish. $7. A lot of flavors, a lot of intensity to something that's nice that you can pop out there, and it's not going to cost you a lot. And so, sparkling wines. Keep that in mind for food pairings too. There's a lot of them out there, and you don't need to just grab French or American domestic. Go check out the Spanish and the Italian sparkling wines, the Cavas and the Proseccos. Sherries. There's another one. Higher alcohol sherries are a perfect pairing with salty or briny snacks. Olives, salted nuts, cured meats, hard cheeses, fried seafood, or other hors d'oeuvres like that. Getting a sherry. There's a lot of popular brands out there. Tio Pepe, Laina. A little bit chilled, not cold, just a little bit chilled, and serve that with your other spices. They have great combinations there. That's going to balance very well. The higher alcohol is going to give you all sorts of great flavors and tastes, and it's going to bring it out in those hors d'oeuvres and those foods. Both the appetizers, high acid, the sherries tend to have the higher alcohol and a little bit more tang, but it's going to leave that little crisp taste in the mouth, and intense flavor is going to pop out. A great possibility there for sherry, a little bit of sherry with your appetizers. A fantastic combination there. Strength and potency in mind, always consider the lighter Pinot Grigios, the Portuguese Vino Verdes, or Spanish Albarinos are all generally lower in alcohol with some fruitiness and are great starter wines. You want something that's not going to start overpowering you right away. Those are a great way to do it. Just a lower alcohol, lighter, fruitier. The alcohol really is going to be something that's going to come into play. So you need to look at that when you're picking up a wine for a meal. Look at your alcohol level, because higher alcohols really can play it. Seafood. Seafood and tannins are not a good combo. It's a good basic rule to follow. You don't get a big, heavy red to serve with your seafood dishes. Most of the time, it's not going to work, although there are exceptions, as there is in anything. A very popular pairing now, salmon and the Pinot Noir. These are being served everywhere now. A lot of restaurants are suggesting a Pinot Noir with salmon. And I've had it. It's great. It's wonderful. It's just a good way to do it. With lighter hued fish and most seafood, though, light is still the best way to go. Preparation, though, again, we're coming into this. We talked about this with pasta. How it's prepared, again, we have to talk about this with seafood. Creamy clam chowders. A nice buttery Chardonnay. Great combo. Tomato and garlic-based stews. Excuse me, prefer something a little bit more red around Tempranillo. That would be something with that. A grilled whole fish, well seasoned and oiled, do well with reds. You want something that's you want something that's going to be hold up with it. Flakier fish, flakier flesh fish like snapper, no better with lighter, younger reds. Don't get something too heavy. A dense flesh fish, swordfish, steaks, tuna, halibut. These, then you need to go a little bit more medium-bodied reds. You're looking at swordfish steak, tuna steak, and just, you know, bringing back to that. It's, you know, especially if you have those blackened, which is a very popular way to have those particular cuts of our particular types of fish. A nice blackened swordfish steak, a delicious, but you don't want to have your light whites with it. You're going to look at a medium-bodied, maybe something Rojo, Burgundy, a nice Barbera. I love a Barbera. A nice Barbera or something like that. Chicken, pork, game, fish. Again, matching body to the ingredients, to the dish. While chicken is popular American food, it can also be very bland. So you need to look at how it's prepared, if it's so what you're going to have. Poached or sauteed chicken breasts, stay with the light-bodied whites. If it's you're seasoning it, saucing a lot of sauces, a lot of stuff with that chicken breast, then go with New World or French Chardonnays, Austrian Grunewaldvillen there. Roast chicken with stews, onion, mushroom, carrots. You're looking at a heavier-bodied white, a very oaky Australian wine, or an Australian or California Chardonnay, one with some body to it, some oomph to it. Also, a Chianti Classico. And by the way, I'm going to be talking about the Chianti Classico in a few minutes here, new 2013 rules that are out. Good Chianti Classico. Burgundies or other Old World Pinots. Those will hold up well with a roasted chicken that you have, the onions, carrots, all that stuff on. Pork and game, probably the most versatile of all the proteins, managing to easily with light, un-oaked whites. Barbecued ribs or grilled sausages, good with a little bit richer whites. Salamis, bacon, other cured vegetables, other cured varieties of that style, and sausage styles, medium to full-bodied reds. You're gonna get the a stronger, especially sausages and stuff. Sausages tend to give you a little bit more seasoning, more oomph to it. So start picking up the reds that will balance that. Roast pork and game dishes, or creamed or highly seasoned recipes. Again, same rules as poultry. The intense seasoning or transformative cooking styles will dictate which type of wine you want to pick up with it. Not just the fact that it is roast pork or a game dish. It's what you're doing with it that's going to dictate your wine. Most beef dishes, especially those highly spiced ones, especially Asian too, and you got to keep this in mind. Asian is going to be normally call for fuller-bodied reds, though. You watch your cuts. Some of your lighter cuts and some of your thinner cuts are, you don't get into the too heavy of red, or else you're going to lose flavors on the meat. The more caramelized the cooking style, high heat grilling, long or slow cooking, stuff like that, the more intense the wine should be. You should look to cut the fat and intensity with nice, fruity, acidic wine with a lot of tannins. Those will help balance it out here. Dry wines versus sweet wines. Sweet wines are usually not really included in the meal. Usually it's at the end. This is dessert. How often people always say, oh, it's a sweet wine. It's, I refer to it as a dessert wine. Well, not all sweet wines are actually dessert wines. Some before meal cheese snacks that are salty and sugary foods match well with a little bit sweeter wines. You don't have to have something that's intense. You can do a little bit sweet with the sugary or salty snacks, and that balances that combo there is really good. The German Spätlese and Auslese, the Rhine wines and others are really offered quite often with spicy foods, especially with Indian food, Thai food or other Asian country foods. If you're familiar with those foods, it's got that spiciness, that little different taste in there. So your sweet wines, a nice Gewürztraminer with those foods are a great combination. The Gewürz has a little bit of spiciness, but tends to be slightly sweeter. High alcohol levels of soy sauce and fish sauce, or red or green chilies, or other intense and wine-challenging ingredients like, you know, cilantro, lemongrass, ginger, cumin, tamarind. These dishes can make a lot of the wines with high alcohol seem very hot. The acid just sort of tart. The tannins almost chewy, just overpowering. There are exceptions, though. You know, sparkling wines and lightly chilled reds like a Beaujolais or other fruity wines with low alcohol can work great with those foods. Keep the alcohol low, keep the fruitiness up, and don't try to match up some of those high, saucy, heavy ingredient wines with stuff that are powerful themselves, because it's going to intensify the flavors in the wine. So soften a little bit. Vegetarian dishes, again, look at what you are having. Beware of the levels of sweetness and other ingredients like vinegars and chilies and pungency. This is going to also dictate what types of wines you're going to have with it. Watch those. There's also vegetables wild cards. I mean, you know, artichokes. I've had a meal out of artichoke hearts. The wines that I've had with were just very soft, very light red wines, rosés and stuff. It worked well. A little bit body of the rosés. Asparagus. These white wines, again, rosés work well with it. And more and more wine, more and more foods that we're starting to have from, say, Greece, Eastern Europe, and other regions that are becoming more and more available here, that are more and more popular. You're finding them in more cities. Restaurants are opening up with these ethnic dishes from Eastern Europe and from Asia. Look at the wine that's going to balance. You want something that's going to balance out with those things. There's rules to remember. Here's four basic rules to remember. Number one, and this isn't a rule, but this is something to always keep in mind. Make sure you like the wine you're drinking. If you're having a meal and someone says, here, you should have this wine with that meal, and you've never cared for that wine, then, you know, just because they suggest it doesn't mean it will go well with that. You can give it a try if you're adventurous, but, you know, if you don't like that type of wine, don't drink it. Like the wine you're drinking. Rule number one, the higher the alcohol in the wine, the more it will intensify the fiery sensation of spicy foods. Good rule to remember. Wines with some residual sugar and lower alcohol work best, which is why Rieslings have often been the go-to wine in Thai and other Asian cuisines, using plenty of chilies, fish sauces, and other intense ingredients. Also, a Gewürztraminer. I love a Gewürz with a Thai food. I think that's a great combination. But remember that the higher the alcohol in wine, the more intense it will cause the spicy foods itself. Number two, fat loves astringency and tannin, and vice versa. Strong, salty, and fatty cheeses work best with medium to full-bodied reds. Zinfandels and New World Cabs and Rojos, while more fresh and sour cheeses like unaged goat and sheep cheese want something tangy, like maybe a Sauvignon Blanc from New Zealand. Three, like sometimes softens like. Same old equals same old. When a highly acidic dish, say, for example, a summery gazpacho is served with a similarly acidic wine, both will taste less tangy when in combination. Salty foods, too, will soften a high acid wine. So if you wine with very high acid, a salty dish or salty food will do it. Don't be seasoning the crap out of your foods with salt, though. That's not good. Soy sauce is very salty, so, you know, be careful. Don't use cooking wines. Cooking wines are full of salt. If the wine is not good enough to drink, it's not good enough to put in your food. Never, ever buy cooking wine. It is horrible. It's full of sodium. It's just, you know, what a great sell gimmick. And number four, most wines will taste sour and tannic when served with a sweet dessert, which is why port, salt turns, and Pedro Ximenez sherries are reliable suggestions for the end of the meal, or with extremely fatty and salty cheese, like Roquefort or other intense blue cheeses. So there you go, wine and food. Thank you, Raffle Rescue, for your question. That was an interesting question, and helps us match and pair up our meals much better there. And now, moving on, something I wanted to talk to you about here. I saw this some time back, and I've been wanting to share it with you, and now's a good chance to do it. The Chianti Classico. Chianti. New rules went into effect at the beginning of 2013 for Chianti. A bunch of new rules. This is out of one of my trade journals also. You thought you knew the difference between Chianti and Chianti Classico. Well, think again. You don't. The Italian DOCG, which is Demonia Zone di Origine Controlla e Garantita. I destroyed that, I know, so y'all can laugh at that. This is their status, the higher status, the controlling board. There are 73 Italian DOCGs out there. Chianti Classico and Chianti are both part of it. But the DOCG decree of the 1996 issued two distinct sets of production regulations, wine zones, and consorzio for Chianti and Chianti Classico. In 2013, the changes were approved for production regulations of just Chianti Classico. This is the little small one right there, Chianti around Chianti Classico. But Chianti Classico regulations were changed. They have revamped. The two areas, both of which are DOCGs, might just as well be two different countries. This is how it's changed it. There are no overlap. If for any reason Chianti Classico wine has been declassified, it does not automatically become a Chianti, which is an interesting thing. If I'm in the Chianti Classico district and my wine becomes declassified as Chianti Classico, that doesn't mean that I can still say, okay, well, now I'm a Chianti, because it's different regulations and different rules followed. You are just, I don't know what you would be then. I don't know how you would be determined on that. But Chianti Classico is calling itself the new Chianti Classico. It's a little confusing. Chianti Classico has always been defined as the zone between the provinces of Florence and Siena since 1716. Chianti surrounds the Chianti Classico zone and may have wines designated from numerous different areas around there. From these specific areas have strict production methods and requirements and have reduced permitted yields. So the Chianti area has lowered the production yields. Chianti Superior has the smallest permitted yields. Reserva is used for the best vintages. So If you're looking for a Chianti, look for those, the Chianti Superior and Chianti Reserva. Chianti Classico has gone even further and developed a new quality pyramid. This concerns the grape varieties, the yields, the vineyards, and the aging. At the base of the pyramid is the Chianti Classico Annata, A-N-N-A-T-A, or Wine of the Vintage. This must be aged for 1 year and have at least 12% alcohol. The Reserva has more tasting and laboratory regulations, has 12.5% minimum alcohol, and must be aged for 2 years. The top of the pyramid is the new Chianti Classico Gran Selezione, G-R-A-N, Gran S-E-L-E-Z-I-O-N-E, Gran Selezione. I'm sure I'm pronouncing that wrong since I don't know how to speak Italian, which is the equivalent of estate bottled. So Gran Selezione is the same as estate bottled as far as interpretation, meaning it's usually the winery's own grapes. These wines must be aged for a minimum of 30 months or 2 years, of which 3 months must be in the bottle before release and have 13% minimum alcohol. The tasting and laboratory regulations are even stricter than those for Reserva. This Gran Selezione will give status to estates and single vineyards and is generally generating a lot of excitement among all the areas there, all the producers of the Gran Selezione and all that. It's something that's they've been quite, or they've been battling for a long time, actually. Of these three levels, you must declare in advance what you're going to do. So, in other words, I'm going to make Gran Selezione this year, but oops, it messed up, so I'll just drop it down to the Reserva or to the Annata. You can't do that. You declare what. You must declare in advance which you're going to do, which use for your final wine, deliberate selection of the grapes you're going to be using in the final wine and all that. The main grapes, as before, are still Sangiovese with a minimum of 80%. It may go up to 100%, but you've got to have at least 80% Sangiovese. That leaves 20% of the other red grapes, which can be indigenous or international. Chianti, on the other hand, has a minimum of just 70% Sangiovese, and the remaining 30% may contain up to 15% international varieties, including Cabernet and all those, and 10% white varieties. So just the Chianti can also include white varieties. There are no white grapes permitted in the Chianti Classico wines, by the way. The Black Rooster. If you're familiar with Chianti Classico, you've seen the Black Rooster on a symbol. It's been around since medieval times, but is noted for the historic date of 1716 when Chianti Classico Zone became official. 1716, Chianti Classico became official. It has been in and out of the region. It has been used and it hasn't been used with the laws of the 1960s, which guarantee consistency to the wines of the region. It's been used a lot more. The Rooster represents all of Chianti, including the Classico zone, but now it belongs only to Chianti Classico. Chianti wines around the Classico zone are marked with the stylized C. So if you see the Rooster now, then that's a Chianti Classico. Anything else, if you just see a C on it, that is not Chianti Classico. That's outside of the zone into the outer areas, the other areas. That's ones that surround the Classico zone. Sangiovese predominates, obviously, in it. Cabernet Sauvignon and Merlot are actually used quite often as blend, because it brings out some nice flavors and aromas and all that. And so attention, Chianti Classico, they're starting to pick it up again. They're starting to use it again. It's starting to become a new fresh area, if you will. So it's look for them, pick them up. There's some new rules and regulations. And actually, some of these rules and regulations, since this went into effect, officially went into effect at the beginning of this year, 2013, it's going to be a year before even the lower end, the Anata wines come out, because they got to be aged for at least 1 year. And the others up to 30 months, minimum of 30 months and 3 months in the bottle. So it won't be a couple, or it won't be 3 years before you start seeing the Grand Saison counties come out there. So it should be interesting when they do hit the shelves, what's going to happen with them and how they're going to be and how they're going to be received. It should be an interesting. If they're smart, they'll use a big campaign and say, hey, we're coming out with our first and all that stuff. Another thing I want to cover here quickly, and this is just something I read and I thought was just fascinating. It's talking about alcohol trends and innovations. Well, article, not your parents' wines anymore. They're saying the millennial customers are looking for different wine varietals. They're looking for different wines to have. They're not locked into the old styles and the old wines, which is probably true because the United States, what was it, 6 months ago, I think, that we took over as the number one wine consumers in the world. Yay. So because of that, we have to give a lot of credit to millennials, to these kids out there who are discovering wine now and starting to drink more and more wine. One thing I noticed, this article went on and talked about the different areas, and Finger Lakes particularly is saying the Finger Lakes area is really starting to show a lot of promise because of what they have available in their Rieslings. And I've said in the past, the Rieslings of Finger Lakes is phenomenal. They really should concentrate on it more. This article went over and said that, yes, it does. They are concentrating on it more. And they're coming out with some phenomenal Rieslings out of there. They also talked about Georgia, the country of Georgia. I think we covered Georgia a little bit on one of the programs in the past. But Georgia is one of the oldest wine-producing regions globally. They export wines to 60 countries, with 47% of the exports going to the Ukraine, 19% to Kazakhstan, 6% to Belarus, and 5% to China. But this year, they have been able to start shipping to Russia again. They're resuming the exports to Russia. Since 2006, Russia has had an embargo on Georgia, and they haven't been able to ship to them. And now they can. And because of that, it's opening up an enormous market. And so Georgia's exported 40 million liters to Russia and is expected to export over 10 million bottles a year to the country once all of it's been ironed out against the embargo. Chilean brands are becoming some of the top. There's five Chilean brands that are in a survey that was taken about international survey released last month about what Chilean brands Contra de Toro was ranked number one, with Conocer as number 18, Leda number 28, Santa Rita at 30, and Andurigo at 47. Portugal is coming out with a lot of wines. From January to October of last year, Portugal wine exports volumes increased by 7.7% compared to previous years. Over the past year's organization of Vini Portugal, which is controlling and in charge of the exports, are trying to educate the world more and more, particularly the United States. I don't know if you noticed, but there's been a blitz in some of the wine shops and liquor stores about Portuguese wines. They're really starting to talk more and more about Portuguese wines. Last year, from January to October, the country exported about $27.5 million worth of wine to the United States. So it's exploding. Australia, South Africa, and parts of Europe have been planting Portuguese grapes and trying to trying to get them to grow there and trying to look at the styles and all that. So it's another big reason, another big area, another big growth product. And Washington State, this is another one too. Washington State is exploding. But to end this, I got to read you this little paragraph here, which just I was shocked when I read this. St. Michelle Wine Estates. We've all seen Chateau St. Michelle wines. They're on shelves everywhere. St. Michelle Wine Estates is the largest producer of Washington wines, producing and selling more than half of the wines in the state. Now you think, wow, but listen to this next sentence. Washington State is the second largest wine-producing state in the U.S. behind California. OMG. That means that St. Michelle is just is enormous. I mean, absolutely enormous. Economic impact on Washington wine is phenomenal. There are over 700 wineries in Washington State, producing over 20 million gallons of wine, which means that St. Michelle is producing over 10 million gallons of wine a year. While 3% of Washington wines are exported, the wines in the Chateau St. Michelle portfolio are performing well in Europe, Asia, Canada, which is its top market, and South America is on its size to be the next big area for their wine. On a global scale, country of origin for wine isn't as important as style. And this is what they're looking at. This is what most people, consumers don't know much about regions or terroir or any of that stuff. It's the style of the wine and what they're finding and what they're drinking. And that's it. So, a lot of information tonight, a lot of stuff.
Once again, without a guest, you still managed to hold us with a lot of information. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. I never have problems talking.
If I had to do that, I would come on at 7 o'clock and do this and just... Yeah. That's about it. And then after an hour. All right, that's the show. Thank you all for tuning in.
Thanks for tuning in.
that would be mine. But you come up with this, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. I'm over here taking notes. I got another full page. It's just it's amazing.
Like we say on the show, there's so much about wine out there. There is just so much about wine. You know, we can just go on and on and on and on about wine, and I do sometimes. But that's what's so cool about it. You know, there is just so much about it.
Oh yeah, there's changes. There's things happening somewhere. I mean, it's a huge industry, and you know, there's something going on at all times with it. So that's fantastic. Unfortunately, it doesn't seem to be going on very much in Texas, which I don't understand.
No. Well, they got a lot of wineries. They just don't want to talk about it.
They do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't quite get that.
Yeah.
I mean, are they that big? Where I mean, I don't know. Is it? Can't. Well, because you know, next week
somebody from Texas is gonna be, you know, gunning for us.
Well, forget it. Yeah, forget it now.
Yeah. But you know, Texas is really what would we our guest. A couple of weeks ago, my lookalike was telling me that Texas is now number Paul was his name. Texas Paul, is now number four behind California, Washington, and New York. Then Texas in the number of wines produced. I mean, it's enormous number of wineries down there. The list I have, I got like 130 on my list here, and he said that there's like over 200 or something. I mean, it's just I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what the word is with Texas. You know, it's just I don't know.
Yep.
Maybe they're so concerned about, you know, becoming their own state and
country.
They don't really talk to us.
Yeah.
Republic people.
Well, who knows? Maybe something will happen and they'll go, oh, yeah, we probably could go in there and share some information about what's happening and change the opinions. Who knows? Let's see. What else? We have anything, nothing happening at the winery this weekend.
Nothing happening at the winery. We're open. We you know, school starts here next Monday. We're all looking forward to school starting. It's not going to affect us directly, but it will because the roads. Yeah.
Yep.
The roads are going to get packed, though.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to do that. I'm looking for that. Traffic is the worst. Whenever they say, oh, school's back, you know, we're all thinking, yay. And then we go, oh. And then you get on the road and try to go somewhere.
Yeah.
And it is not fun.
Not fun.
All of
a sudden. You know,
yep.
So that's you know, one thing we have to look forward to next Monday. And because of it, you know, things are slowing down everywhere here. I think school starts, and so people gear up for school, and everything else just falls by the wayside for a couple of weeks while that starts out. So,
yeah, everything's put on hold. But except for All About Wine, which will be back on August 22nd.
Yes,
I'm not sure right now what's on the show for August 22nd, but you never know, something will happen.
If we can get a hold of anybody from Texas, we'll get them on.
Yep. And any previous, you know, anybody else we've had or, you know, a state that we've covered, it doesn't have to be in order, as we've had someone from the New Zealand Bali area who was also actually working in New Zealand. But we kind of went back there. So, you know, that can always happen. And you never know. But the best way to stay in tune with that is to go to the Facebook page, because Ron's updating that as he talks to people. And plus, you can pose your questions there as well. Get on the Facebook side of things and post your suggestion, as Raffle Rescue did. Thank you very much. Is that – God, I can't remember her name. She's the one that does –
Lisa.
She's at the – is that Lisa? Okay. She's there at the Wine Fest, when you have Wine Fest.
Yeah, she is. She's
really, really great cause.
Yeah.
So, definitely thank you for that again. And Lisa posted on there for Raffle Rescue, and we covered the topic tonight. And it was great. So go to the facebook.com/allaboutwineBTR. All one word, no dashes or spaces or anything. All About Wine BTR on facebook.com. And check it out. And you can follow us on there and or like the page. Follow us is on Twitter. So like the page on Facebook. You can also follow us on Twitter. But most of your up-to-date what's happening on the show is going to be right there on Facebook. So that's the best way to stay in touch and what's going on. So if we can get someone from Texas. Hello, Texas. Anybody?
Hello, Texas.
Yeah.
We tried to be actually nice, and then we tried to insult you a little bit on the show, so, you know, respond.
Get them through insults. There you go.
That's right, you know, one way or another. We want to talk to Texas wineries. I'm going to send out another big blitz of emails and see if they might respond to some of those. But, get on the phone and call some of them, too, and see if I can't get hold of somebody. I think it's harvest. I really am making an excuse for them. I think it's harvest season, because it's happening a lot. Whenever we talk to anybody, we say, when do you harvest? And, you know, August, September is usually the answer. So
that's true. But can't they at least respond to emails? I mean, can't they take a minute and say, hey, I'd like to come on the show. How about in September, October, whatever?
There, you know,
I mean,
you're right. They could. Yeah.
I mean, what if we were, you know, John Q. customer asking about a particular thing? Would they respond, or would they ignore it until after harvest? They'd probably respond, because, you know, it's a different situation. I don't know, but
getting out there, there's no such thing as bad press. I mean, you know,
the
number of listeners we have, and thanks, by the way, everyone out there, but the number of listeners we have would almost say, hey, you know, let me get my name out there, because yeah,
and we've had number two. We haven't gone to the number two state. We haven't gone to Washington yet, but we did right. cover New York, and we did get quite a few out of New York to come on the show. So that was cool.
Yeah.
So, and you know, Texas is number four. So
number four.
to, yeah. Let's go, Texas.
Yeah.
So we'll try again, and we'll see what happens for next week. But it is 8:05 p.m. Eastern time, and we'll go ahead and close the show. Thanks to everybody out there worldwide for tuning in. We appreciate it as always, whether it's live or in the archives, and you know, for checking it out. I really appreciate that. And we'll see you all on August the 22nd. And well, as soon as I find out what's going on, I'll schedule the show, and you'll see it right here on Blog Talk Radio, if you're not checking us out on Facebook. But check it out on Facebook, because it's pretty cool. Interact with other listeners, and, of course, Ron and myself are on there as well. So do that. And we'll see you all next time. Thank you again.
Thank you all very much.
Ron? Yay. Here we go. Oh, boy, this again.
Everyone right. dance.
Yes. One time.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio. A special thanks to our special guests who have appeared on the show, and thanks to you, our listeners, for tuning in and supporting All About Wine. Be sure to follow us on Twitter and like our Facebook page. Go to twitter.com or facebook.com/AllAboutWineBTR. We welcome your comments and questions by email at allaboutwine101@gmail.com. The email address again is allaboutwine101@gmail.com. All About Wine is a weekly program featuring Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida Estates Winery. The winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida. From Interstate 75, take exit 285 and go west for approximately 4 miles. Or from US 19, the Suncoast Parkway, and US 41, go east on State Road 52. The winery is open daily, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m., for retail sales and wine tasting. Visit the gift shop and enjoy the peaceful setting outside under a large shady canopy of oak trees. Florida Estates Winery is pet friendly, and picnics are welcome. For more information, call area code 813-996-2113. That's area code 813-996-2113. Or visit us on the web at www.floridaestateswines.com. Again, that's floridaestateswines.com. Be sure to subscribe to our informative bi-weekly newsletter. Thanks again, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine on Blog Talk Radio.